my Bubbalas. Welcome back. Good to be back with everybody. We've got lots of good stuff to cover this week. The marathon is coming up in 10 days. And this is the first time I am running a marathon with other people. You know, I did the virtual marathon in 2020 because there was no in-person marathon. So that just meant you ran on your own and you tracked it on an app. And I did that. And then I did it again in 2021 virtually. I did 5.5 laps of Randall's Island, which is a great place to run. One of my favorite places to run. I'm not sure it's the same as it was because now half of Randall's Island is this refugee shelter that was set up for all the refugees that are getting like bussed up to New York. But it's a wonderful place to run. And I really like going there. But this year, I'm doing it in person, the New York City Marathon. So if you take nothing else away from this episode, take away this. Please come cheer for me. If you're listening to this and you are anywhere close to New York City, I hope you will come cheer for me in the marathon. I've got this super cool spreadsheet that I put together that shows like where you could cheer every mile marker and where it is on the route and how to get there on the subway. So I hope you do come out. It would mean so much to me to have people out there cheering for me. So please do. My training is fine. Maybe a little less. I maybe haven't trained quite as much as I had wanted to, but I feel like I'm in pretty good shape for the race. I don't know if I have a target time. I mean, like, I want to do under 4 hours. My time in the virtual race last year was 3:48, I think. But, you know, that's easier because the whole thing was, it was at Randall's Island. It's flat. There's no crowds to slow me down. But also, there's no crowds to, like, cheer me on and help me speed up, I guess. So I would love to have you out there cheering. Drop me a note and let me know where you'll be so that I look for you and, feel free to text me on race day. I'll have my phone with me, although I don't think I'm going to bring my AirPods, but I don't think I'm going to leave them in my ears because I want to hear the crowd. I think that'll fire me up. But yeah, please, reach out and come cheer for me. I'm excited. The marathon is a lot of fun. Although I do like doing half marathons more. I think they're just like a little bit more civilized, but I'm psyched for this. So definitely come out and cheer for me. Last week we talked about Kanye, and my feeling was, actually 2 weeks ago we talked about Kanye, my feeling was F that guy. And I think I was pretty early in saying that. I think there were lots of folks that were still on the fence or trying to avoid, taking a position on it. I was pretty early in saying, this is bad. This is really bad. And you know what? Then it seems like everyone else came around. And now the rest of the world is like trying to cancel Kanye West. I'm not a believer in cancel culture. I don't like the idea of it. But here's how I think about it. If I were in business with Kanye West and he came out and said the anti-Semitic bullshit that he did, I would say, I don't want to be in business with you anymore. You don't reflect values that I believe in, and I don't want to be in business with you anymore. This isn't like a simple disagreement, like a you voted Republican, I voted Democrat type of deal. It's you are coming out and saying you want death for me and others like me. And why would I want to be in business with you? And so I would expect that anyone who feels that way is going to say, I don't want to be in business with this guy. And many have. It took some of them a long time, right? Because it's hard when you've got millions of dollars and you're taking a stand on principle against the interests of your pocketbook. That's hard for people to do. really, I understand that. And I understand why it took Adidas so long to, you know, get their act together and decide to do that, because it's hard to take a stand on principle. I mean, also Adidas, they're all Germans, so they probably agreed with him. They were like, yeah, yeah, start up the ovens, get them going. So, you know, anyways, he seems to have lost a lot of his business, which that's pretty stupid. He had a good thing going, and he seems to have blown a lot of it up. And I've written about, even recently, I've written about being self-destructive and what that's like. Because I've been self-destructive many, many times. I have done things that are not in my own best interest. I have blown things up, blown up good things in my life, whether on purpose or by accident. I've done it and then regretted it. And maybe he regrets this. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But it seems like it was pretty stupid what he did. And, you know, I will say, though, it is weird that I keep seeing people posting on Instagram with the words, I support my Jewish friends and the Jewish people. That feels as odd and as performative as back in June of 2020, when every like performative idiot that I know, every virtue signaling idiot that I know was posting like a little black square on Instagram right after George Floyd was killed. That was weird. It was weird then. This is weird now. It's like very cringy. It seems very bizarre to me, and I could do without people posting that stuff. You know what else I could do without? I could do without these pink-haired, septum-piercing, lunatic climate activists who are going into museums and galleries, and this seems to be the thing now. It's happened a couple of times where they take cans of soup and dump it on famous paintings to destroy them and to make a statement. So they did it once in London, pouring tomato soup on a Van Gogh painting. And then I think there was in Germany last week, they did it. Maybe it was with a Monet. I don't remember. But and then these maniacs super glue their hand to the wall behind them so that it's even harder to get them away from the sight of this mayhem. And the message seems to be like, if we do this, then, you know, it's to end oil or something, which I got to say, nothing makes me want to burn coal as much as seeing one of these freak shows pour tomato soup on a Van Gogh. Like, that is not a great way to get positive attention to your cause. I doubt that they have accomplished anything with this form of protest. I doubt the entire nature of the protest itself. And I really believe strongly in protecting the environment. So it's not that I'm saying the idea of environmentalism is a flawed one. What I doubt is the certainty of this belief, the almost religious certainty of this belief, because that reminds me of others who advocate with a certainty and then make bad policy. There was a sort of religious certainty around everyone has to do certain things for COVID. We all have to social distance, and everybody has to get 19 vaccine shots, and we have to shut down the schools. There was like a certainty of like, this is the right policy. And anyone who dares to believe otherwise is spreading misinformation or is evil or is trying to kill grandma or whatever. And how many bad policies, how much damage was done with that kind of certainty. We've had more than 20 years of dire predictions about the climate. And if anything, they haven't come true. And I don't think that's because of some brilliant government action. It's not like we had a dire prediction and then it didn't happen because there was, you know, some incredible government policy that saved us. There are market changes. It turns out that there are ways of producing energy that are more desirable and for profit focused market participants. So I think that as these worst case scenarios have come off the table, this sort of religious certainty that these protesters have, it feels like it isn't based in reality. I mean, that's the same certainty with which Greta Thunberg flipped the world upside down. And I don't understand, I've said this before, I do not understand why so many world leaders entrusted their economic policy to this autistic girl with no high school degree. And what did they think the results would be? Because the results now are that we took the wrong actions. I think you can directly trace the dominoes from Greta Thunberg to Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. That's not like a tenuous connection. That's an easy one to make. She is part of a long line of useful idiots that have caused economic carnage, political carnage, with their certainty. And anyone who dared disagree was branded as a spreader of disinformation. Likely kicked off of Twitter, kicked off of Facebook and Instagram. You know, there was a thing a couple weeks ago, PayPal, the payments company, they amended their terms of service. You know, that's the like legalese that you agree to when you become a customer of something. They amended their terms of service and added a sentence that said that if you spread misinformation, that they will charge you $2,500 for every incident of misinformation. So they are functioning like a bank. They're holding on to your money. And they're saying if they don't like what you have to say, they're just going to pull $2,500 out of your account. And when they did that, there was predictably a lot of distress about the policy and a lot of protest. And then they walked it back within a day. They said, that was a mistake. We didn't mean to put that in there. I don't believe that for a second. You mean to tell me that they had dozens of lawyers and business folks who were working on this policy probably for months and then it slipped in by accident? Come on. And we know it wasn't an accident because they walked it back and then just yesterday they re-implemented that policy. This is so dangerous. Why do they get to decide what is, quote, misinformation? What happens if it turns out that the misinformation was just information? Why do they have the right to say what you're allowed to talk about or write about? I'll give a simple example, which I know polarizes folks. Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, had a laptop that he got repaired and then forgot about. And the laptop had lots of embarrassing stuff and emails. It had photos of him smoking crack, whatever. I'm not here to pile on the guy for smoking crack. That's not the interesting part. But this laptop, its existence became public in October of 2020, right before the presidential election. The New York Post ran a big article about it. And there was no question, if you were a sensible observer who was not politically biased, there was no question this was authentic. You can debate whether it was important or relevant, but it was authentic. And more than 50 former spies and world leaders got together and signed a letter that said this is Russian misinformation, which it wasn't. What they said was misinformation. So let me ask you, what would happen then if you started writing about Hunter Biden's laptop in October of 2020? Would PayPal have docked you $2,500? And what would happen later on when the consensus came around and it turned out, hey, it wasn't misinformation, it was accurate information? Are they going to put the $2,500 back in your account? What's the appeal process here? How do you get your fucking money back? What happens to all of those former spy chiefs who signed that letter? Do they get docked $2,500? This is a stupid policy. So here's my next recommendation. Boycott PayPal. Boycott Venmo. They own that. This is not acceptable. The bank doesn't get to decide what you can say. What about when you're just wrong? What about if you just say something? What if you're just vocal but wrong about something? Is that, quote, misinformation? Where do we draw the line? I am so curious who's going to be the first public case where PayPal tries to yank $2,500 out of their account for violating this term of service. I wonder if someone's going to do it on purpose just to elicit a reaction. If you said something like a prediction about the climate that didn't come true, would that be misinformation? Where do we draw the line here? You know, the Biden administration tried to create a ministry of misinformation. I got to look up what was the exact term for it. It was let's see here. Let's Google this. It was the Disinformation Governance Board. And they appointed this woman who described herself as a disinformation expert, Nina Jankowicz. They appointed her the head of it. And then after 3 weeks, there was such pushback that they gave up on the idea. It's a terrible idea. And it is just as bad of an idea when the bank gets to decide whether or not you can keep your money. I started watching a show on Disney Plus called Andor. And it's good. It's the new Star Wars show. And I've said before that I think all of these Disney properties have gone downhill, that they have bad writing, that they take really safe, recycled IP in order to de-risk the investment. And it's bad. Every Star Wars thing of the past, call it 20 years, has been a piece of shit. But this is good. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's got a little bit of a vibe of Blade Runner, which was a great movie. And there's none of the lazy writing tricks that so many similar types of programs have utilized. So much of this, of modern fiction, uses these lazy tropes where, like, just in the nick of time, the hero is saved, or they suddenly have a superpower that makes everything convenient. That's lazy. This is the first Star Wars show in which the Jedi and the Force are not even mentioned once. And it's the best thing they've made in a long time. Really, I would say this is the best thing since The Empire Strikes Back. That was from 1980. So I definitely recommend checking out Andor. I'm enjoying it. There are 8 episodes out so far. I am enjoying it a lot. What else is on that I've watched lately? Atlanta, season 4 of Atlanta. Excellent show. You know, it's like surrealism as a TV show. There aren't many who have the balls to try that. But that's great writing. Rami, season 3 of Rami was excellent. Very intense, but excellent. Mo was pretty good. That was entertaining. So there's some decent stuff out right now to watch. And we're not going to have baseball to watch pretty soon. The Yankees are out. That was a huge bummer. I'm curious what's going to happen with Aaron Judge, just like everyone else is, right? Aaron Judge is the star player on the Yankees, and he's a free agent. And will he sign a long-term contract with the Yankees? At the beginning of the season, the Yankees offered Aaron Judge $213 million for 7 years. And he said no. And then he had what was probably the greatest season of any baseball player in history. And now he might get offered credible offers of $400 million for 10 years. So this guy turned down a deal. He bet on himself, and he had a good roll of the die. So I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the Yankees can offer him that huge ticket. I think they want him to be the face of this team for the next decade. I think it's even longer than that, right? They want to have him as a career Yankee who they can then trot out as an old-timer and keep him in the executive office. I think that's what they want. Whether they'll cough up the money for it, I don't know. I hope so. I mean, he's an incredible player. And he's a great role model, right? So many of these athletes act like assholes. And he doesn't do that, right? He's the guy, every time they interview him, he goes, well, it's a team effort and my whole team is amazing. You know, they're like, how did you hit 62 home runs this year? He's like, well, it's a team effort. That's amazing media training. That is very impressive, right? Compare that with Antonio Brown, who was a wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he got pissed off in a game, and he just yanked off his jersey and started talking smack and trying to get the crowd fired up, and then just like disappeared. That's not good media training. But we got the Knicks. Knicks look like they're having a good start to the season. They're 3-1. They've been playing pretty well. They won in overtime last night. I was happy to see that. What else is good on TV? You know, we talked a lot about Jeffrey Dahmer a couple weeks ago. I think that's going to be the hottest Halloween costume. I walked into the Warby Parker store a few days ago, and I suggested to a salesperson that they should have a model of glasses called the Dahmer. I don't know why, like, every serial killer in the 70s and 80s had the same glasses. Like, why was that the standard issue for serial killers? But yeah, I think he's going to be the top Halloween costume. You know, I perceive that some folks are upset about this, that they see the Netflix show about him, which was excellent. It was really excellent. And people see that as having glamorized the violence and glamorizing a bad guy. I'm not sure that it did. I mean, he did seem kind of sexy in the show, but he also seemed like a really bad dude. And it's also just, I mean, it's fact. It's a story that's worth telling. It's an interesting moment in history. It's interesting to learn about how this guy terrorized gay, black, and Asian people in Milwaukee. How the police totally fucked it up because they were so homophobic. How his family stood by him. I mean, there's so much about this story that is interesting to learn about. So I'm glad Netflix put out this show. I don't know. I mean, is the fact that so many people want to dress up as Jeffrey Dahmer a sign that they glamorized him as a person? Can you call this? Here's a question. Can you call this an LGBT show? Right? Like, if you're Netflix and you're like, we need more LGBT content, can you call Dahmer LGBT content because it's about a gay guy who was doing terrible stuff to other gay men? If you're going to call it an LGBT show, does it have to somehow glamorize being gay? Or is it okay that you're just showing Jeffrey Dahmer chewing penises and eating people's livers and whatever? But it's a real story. Tell the story. It's a good one. It'll be funny to see how many kids dress up as Jeffrey Dahmer. That's an interesting kids costume. Or if like there's a group where you have like one person dress up as Dahmer and then you have 17 people dress up as his victims, and maybe you have a couple people dress up as the cops. Like, you could really do a group costume here, and then you put holes and, you know, like little blood spots on people's heads where he would like drill into their skulls. There's a lot you could do with this as a Halloween costume theme that could be fun. I don't love Halloween. I mean, I guess I go in phases around it. Some years I'm all in, and other years I don't care. I think this is one of the I don't care years for me. Last year I was Squid Games. I was contestant 4, 5, 6 for Squid Games from Squid Games. But I don't have a costume planned for this year unless I decide to do a last minute Dahmer. Cause you know I gotta jump on that bandwagon. All right, rapid fire, quick, let's revisit a few topics I've talked about recently. Number one, I made a call about, I don't know, what was it, 6 months ago or so, that it was time to buy Facebook stock. I was not right. Gotta own that one. I was not right. So I said Facebook was a buy when it was at like 180, and the stock is now at 97. So that was wrong. Gotta own it when you're wrong about something. That was not a good call. It's incredible to me how much market value has been destroyed by Apple making a change to its privacy features. If you're not familiar with this, let's quickly review. Facebook, now it's called Meta, makes their money by selling advertisements. Right, you scroll through it, you see lots of ads. And advertisers are willing to pay a lot for those ads because they're precise. Because Facebook knows exactly what you're interested in. And those ads are so well targeted that the advertisers will pay a fortune for every ad impression, for every person who sees those ads. So they made a lot of money. And then about a year ago, Apple rolled out some changes on the iPhone, which block Facebook from tracking what you see and what you do with the same level of precision. You can still give them that access, but you have to choose to, and most people do not, which means that the advertisements are not as relevant. Because they don't know what you're doing, right? If they know that you're looking up the website for Harley Davidson, they can show you advertisements for helmets and motorcycle jackets and motorcycles. And those advertisers will pay a lot because they know you're in the market. But if Facebook doesn't know what websites you're visiting, then they're not going to be able to monetize that inventory of advertisements in the same way. And Apple made that change. That's why over the past year, when you download a new app and it says, ask app not to track or allow access, most people predictably say, ask this app not to track me. And then you're less valuable to Facebook. And as a result, Facebook has seen its profits decline dramatically. And I thought that they would climb out of that. I thought they would innovate out of that and climb out of it, and that the effects would not be as pronounced. But it's bad for Google, it's bad for Facebook. And as a result of that, they've seen their profitability decline. Now, Mark Zuckerberg has been doubted before, and he'll be doubted again. He has gone all in on investing in what he believes to be the future of the company, the metaverse. And if he's right, he's going to be dramatically right. And maybe he creates his own success. Maybe by investing so much into this vision, it becomes reality and he proves himself right. I don't know, but he has really gone all in on this one. You know, Amazon has become a big advertising business. So Amazon, if you're searching something on Amazon.com, they know what you're in the market for. If you search for a chef's knife, then they know you're in the market for knives. And then all the sellers who are selling knives will pay to have their knife listed at the top, because most people buy the first or second thing that's listed. So Amazon has turned into an advertising business, a very profitable and very precise advertising business, because you go there when you're ready to buy something and they know what you're going to buy, and they don't need to track you. They don't need to know what websites you visited, because you're putting the information directly in there when you are ready to buy something. So that inventory is valuable. But all of those startups that made consumer products that were advertised on Instagram, those businesses have been zeroed by Apple making these privacy changes. And Apple swears that they're doing it because they are obsessed with privacy, the privacy of their customers and protecting customer data. Maybe, but one might also question whether they are just trying to weaken a rival, whether they're trying to create their own advertising business. I don't know the answer, but I suspect it's probably all of the above. So my call on buying Facebook was not the right one. I made a call on Credit Suisse about, a month ago, 3 weeks ago, where I questioned whether Credit Suisse was going to zero. I mean, sure seems like it. So can I call that a good call? Maybe. Credit Suisse is a mess. I mean, it's like the most poorly run bank. I don't know why Credit Suisse still exists. Like, what differentiates any of their businesses from their competitors? They're the worst run investment bank, the worst run risk management, the worst brokerage firm, wealth management. They've stumbled into one clusterfuck after another. So I think maybe that was the right call. Another call that I made recently was when Biden announced that everyone in federal prison for possession of pot was going to be released. I questioned on this podcast a few weeks ago, I questioned how many people that could possibly be. It turns out it's zero. There are zero people in federal prison for possession of marijuana. So when he made this big deal of announcing this policy change that everyone in federal prison for possession would be released, he was talking about zero people. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy that he made this big policy announcement and it affected no one. He clearly knew that at the time. I think that's really weird. Don't you? That's all for now. Remember, you can find tons of content at leebressler.substack.com. Please become a paid subscriber. I need your support and I depend on it. So become a paid subscriber. Share this with your friends. Tell them to listen. You can find me on socials. You can message me. Let me know what kind of content you want and what you want to hear about. And we'll be back with more soon.